In Venom, Tom Hardy plays Eddie Brock, an investigative journalist who's trying to rebound from a major setback in his career.
But Eddie's plans are halted when he's overtaken by a violent and gooey alien symbiote. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we are talking about the weird and very lucrative superhero horror comedy Venom, so come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsors, Interscope Records and Warner Brothers Pictures. The official soundtrack to A Star is Born, featuring music from Grammy Award winner Lady Gaga and director Bradley Cooper, is out now. The soundtrack to A Star is Born follows the musical arc and romantic story of the movie's two lead characters. Robbie Collin of Time Out says, "Lady Gaga is a revelation." The soundtrack is available now via all physical and digital retailers. A Star is Born, in theaters now.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. With us in the studio is Daisy Rosario from WAMU. Hi, Daisy.
Hello.
It's good to have you here. And also with us is Lars Gottrich of NPR Music. Hi, Lars.
Hello, Stephen.
There you go.
You know what? You said it would be bad. That actually wasn't that bad.
That was not
bad. Thank you. Yeah.
You didn't know your own strength. All right. So Venom is the latest Marvel movie, but it is not really in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of, sort of. Glenn, explain.
This is not technically a Marvel movie, as you said. It is a Sony movie in association with Marvel.
All right. Well, what'd you think?
Man, this thing is a mess. It manages to be both chaotic and listless at the same time, which is tough. It's ugly to look at. They made San Francisco, the most beautiful city in the country, look really crappy. And, you know, Riz Ahmed is sleepwalking through this thing. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Williams, like, what are you doing? Michelle, blink once if you're being treated well. Blink twice if you are in danger. All that said, I kind of dug it.
What?
That was like an M. Night Shyamalan twist right there.
I kind of dug it. I mean, even if you love Black Panther in the Avengers movies, you have to admit that those things are on rails, right? They just move on. They're very careful. They're focus grouped within an inch of their lives. This wasn't. And so for the first time in a superhero film, I didn't know where it was going, probably because the film didn't know where it was going.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, I was talking to Vinny about this, our producer Vinny, and he reminded me that, like, I probably had more fun seeing this than I did watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, which that's a good comparison to make, right? And yet this was more fun in a very odd way, because it was just so all over the place.
Huh. All right. Daisy?
I mean, here's the thing. I would watch Tom Hardy watch paint dry.
Mm-hmm.
I will literally watch him in anything. This movie was terrible. Like, the pace is all over the place. It's, like, really slow and then super fast. There's not even three acts. There's, like, two.
Mm-hmm.
The cast is all great people not doing very well. Michelle Williams' wig is so upsetting. Like, it is
also a middle
distracting.
Yeah, a middle part doesn't look good on anybody.
No, a middle part with, like, this weird, like, is she in the Partridge Family? I don't understand what's happening. I didn't understand tonally what they were going for, but will I watch it again? Absolutely.
Oh, man.
I will end up watching this movie many more times.
Okay, so
wow,
I'm sensing a theme. Here are the reasons it's terrible,
yes,
and why I liked it.
Well, because it's not boring. To me, boring is the ultimate sin. And this is bad and yet somehow compelling, even though I don't think that I'm always reacting the way that they intended. I'm at least reacting. Whereas with, like, the DC movies, I'm just dying a slow death inside.
Right.
And regretting every choice that I've made that day.
The grim and grittiness that does seep into this movie is very much undercut by not only horror elements, but comedy elements. And
goofiness.
Goofiness.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Lars, how about you?
All right, so I've seen, I think, all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies by this point. I know this is not MCU, but I like big budget, blustery, blockbuster films. It's the thing that I enjoy. But I hated this movie.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike our previous panelists, I don't know that I really want to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first meet the symbiote, the thing crash lands to Earth, blah, 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 blah. You know, this is how you set up every horror movie. And I'm like, sweet. This is going to be the Marvel horror movie, like, that I've been waiting for, because, you know, Marvel's dipping their hands in all different types of filmmaking, so a little maybe less superhero-y than others. Mm-hmm. So I was super psyched. And when you first meet the symbiote, it's legitimately terrifying. I'm like, yes, I'm all about the like alien version of a Marvel anti-hero movie. That completely goes out the window within the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we meet Tom Hardy, and he's just a vice journalist bro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I lose interest pretty much immediately from there. Huh.
That's pretty early.
That's pretty early. Yeah. I ended up inadvertently giving this movie a huge advantage when it's trying to win me over. I Googled ahead of time, Venom runtime, as I often do. And the internet told me it was 2 hours and 21 minutes long. So I went into this movie. No, not at all. The internet somehow got it wrong. This movie is like a little more than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It is a small in scope, noisy contraption that does not carry the thematic weight of a lot of these other Marvel movies. This is a kind of a slam-bang, silly, comparatively low budget. It's like $100 million. It's not nothing. But the CGI in this movie is garbage.
Oh, my God.
It is. There are scenes in this movie where we're going to do this a lot. We're going to start out criticizing and end up praising, and it's going to go in the other direction, too. There are lots of scenes in this movie where there's one jet black blob of goo, and it's fighting a jet black and gray blob of goo in the nighttime.
So hard to see.
And there are just entire scenes where I'm sitting there just with my arms shrugging up in the air, like, whatever movie.
Yep.
So I'll counter that. I think the big fight scene towards the end. Where
spoiler, there's a big fight scene.
There's a big fight scene towards the end, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Venom fights another symbiote named Riot, and all this oily goo is, like, fighting each other, and at a certain point, I almost had, like, Transformers PTSD because I was like, I didn't know what I was watching. Yep. But then all of a sudden, everything kind of slowed down, and you got to see this, like, exquisite, grotesque image of, like, the two symbiotes and their slime, like, spreading all around, and you also see, like, their two hosts in the middle of all, and it's beautiful for 2 seconds.
There's a 1988 film called Vampire's Kiss, stars Nicolas Cage. It's one of the first times he goes nuts.
Full Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he makes big choices. I was reminded of that occasionally during this film, watching Tom Hardy go big. Mm-hmm. Didn't go home. Went big. And stayed with it. There's a scene where he is kind of trying to fight the symbiote for whether or not he raises his hands over his head. There's a scene where he plunks down in a lobster tank. He's having a ball. And he brings... Now, Venom doesn't actually show up, spoiler alert, until about 40 minutes into this film.
Oh,
like, I mean, it takes a while.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying, Daisy. The pacing is just all over the place. But as soon as that happens and they go into these dialogue scenes, those are goofy but fun. I mean, really fun.
Well, the cast of this movie, there are a lot of prestige-y people in this film. I mean, Tom Hardy, we've mentioned Michelle Williams, Riz Ahmed, who's like a major TV actor and basically universally beloved figure, kind of sleepwalking, as Glenn, you've said. Jenny Slate is a scientist.
Yeah.
There are some bold casting choices, but there is this sense of like, these folks got to make money, too.
Yeah. You know what it is? I love a failed vision. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that the director of this movie, Ruben Fleischer, at least thought he had a vision. Like, I don't know that he actually had the full vision. But then he has somebody like Tom Hardy who he does fully commit to how bizarre this is, which you kind of have to respect on some level, in addition to the fact that I can look at him forever. Like, literally 40 minutes before we meet Venom, and every other minute I was just thinking, he's so hot. What's happening? He's so hot.
I'll tell you some, I did a little IDB searching. So Ruben Fleischer, mostly known for doing Zombieland, which is a movie I enjoyed. Yeah. I know most people who like zombie movies didn't like that movie because it was too silly, but I thought it was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. The screenwriters are a motley crew. One of them worked on Alias.
Okay.
A plus, sure, yeah. One worked on Con Air. We're getting somewhere.
Okay.
And the other worked on 50 Shades of Grey.
Huh. Yes. That is...
Well, that one is Kelly Marcel, who is Tom Hardy's kind of writing partner. They've worked on a lot of stuff. They've been working together since Bronson, when she helped him rewrite the script of that when they were working with Nicholas Winding Refn.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
This is a movie where Tom Hardy does not cover up his mouth for a good portion of it.
Yeah. Though his face is covered sometimes.
Sometimes. But at least we get a glimpse.
Because it's the law. It's a Tom Hardy movie.
Yeah. Were you guys surprised that it did as well as it did? Broke an October record?
You know, that was kind of the next place I wanted to go with this conversation, is why is this movie a massive hit? And I do have a theory. I think that there is a sense, people talk a lot about superhero fatigue. There are so many of these movies. There are something like 20 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, and they come out now like 3 or 4 a year, and they generally all do very, very well. So some of it is I think you do have a built-in audience that goes to every Marvel movie. But I also think this movie benefits from the subtraction of epic scale. Mm-hmm. When I go to a Marvel movie, I'm often sitting there as I'm making my way to the theater, trying to kind of piece together fragments of this mosaic of plot of like, well, this guy doesn't like this guy. You know, those are very Byzantine movies. And this is as tonally weird as it is, and as much of a kind of a shambles as it is, it's pretty simple. And it's not expecting you to know a whole lot about its characters going in. It's an origin story that a lot of people don't know. A lot of people are coming into this movie like Venom. What's the weird blob on the poster is kind of what a lot of people associate with that. And I think this movie benefits as an October release from not having all of that weight on it and not having all of that scale to it.
Well, we've kind of already talked about the fact that it kind of just ends up coming across as fun. I have to say my expectations were so low.
Yep.
I mean, the movie definitely benefits from me going in with wildly low expectations. But it also is that thing of, as much as I really do enjoy the MCU, like we're so far into it now. There's so much you have to know. I think this movie benefited from low expectations the same way that Ant-Man and Wasp did not benefit from coming right after like Black Panther and Infinity War, which were so big.
Yep.
And Black Panther was great, you know? So it just to jump down in scale on that front where it's characters that are now deeply immersed in that world was weird. And this really kind of let you just kind of put all of that aside and try to have a good time. And it's fun and it's weird. And it's, again, it's not good, but it is interesting to watch at least. And there are jokes that I'm not expecting. And there's tone that I'm not expecting, in part because it can't keep one the entire time.
Right.
And there's also just kind of the way that Venom ends up being as a character was unexpected to me, at least.
Yeah, there's a little thin little line of queerness in this, just a little bit if you're looking for it. You know why it did so well is because the audience was 59% male. This is opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And 64% under the age of 25.
Wow.
Now, that's always true for superhero films to some extent, but not to this extent. This is much higher in terms of youth and the male-female split. But it held on.
Traditionally, there's a huge box office drop from week one to week two for superhero movies, and this one is still chugging right along.
Because those male kids, they have word of mouth, right? They can talk to people and say, yeah, maybe not. But they didn't. They said go.
And there you go. A lot of you presumably have seen Venom, since a lot of people in general have. Come find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Daisy at RunDMR, and you can follow Lars at Total Vibration. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening. We will be back here on Friday with a discussion of the Netflix series Big Mouth. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see all of you right back here on Friday.
This week on Code Switch, La Bamba. Why this Spanish language song with Afro-Mexican roots is an all-American anthem.